Okay, so hello everyone. Thank you for joining today. So this is the fourth week of the Academic Skills Seminar, and we'll be focusing today on something that's really crucial, that really can make the difference between a merit and a distinction, or to one or and a first if you're an undergraduate, and that is having a good and well-structured argument. I will start sharing the screen now with the slides. Okay, here we go. I'm just checking if I can still admit participants. Yeah, everything will work fine, so that's good on the technical side. Okay, so we started on time today, so this means we'll have a lot more time for questions, and there are also always very good questions at the end, and I often rush to answer them, so today at least we'll have more time for the questions, Q&A at the end. So today is building a good argument. So first of all, thank you for those who sent the home exercises. I have to say there was a slight issue on Monday because I did send the exercise in the morning, but no one seems to receive it. And then I resent it, and then most of you have received it and have done it, but there were still some issues with it. So I'll double check what happened there. But don't worry if you didn't have a chance to do the exercise. We look, as in every seminar, we look at a couple of examples. I'm trying every seminar to incorporate a couple of examples from different people in this class, so everyone can get some amount of feedback on their essay and dissertations. So yeah, that's fine. Don't worry if there was like a technical issue. It's probably my fault for not checking, but I did check that the email was sent to everyone, but sometimes there are some issues with those, so I'll make sure that doesn't happen again for next week. So in terms of the seminar structure today, so this was the home exercise for those who hadn't received it or had time to look at it. So the basic idea of the home exercise for today was to look at this structure. This is a very basic structure of structuring your argument, and to look at an essay either that you're writing now currently. It can be your essay or your dissertation that you're currently writing, or look at a previous essay. Sometimes it really helps to look at a previous essay. Perhaps you have an essay that you weren't really happy about the mark, and try to read it again and think about, you know, how is your argument structured, and try to think about how you fit it into those boxes. It really depends on your topic and of course the length of the essay or dissertation. This is a really basic structure. So, you know, looking at one argument structure in longer dissertations, there are different parts of the argument, and you may have, you know, a diagram for each part of the argument when you structure it. But this was just the basic example we looked at for this home exercise, looking at identifying one argument. Some of you identified two or three arguments, which is really good, and had, you know, many different errors that went connected different other boxes in this model, and then looking at three key reasons. I mean, again, it depends on your topic, it depends on your reading and the argument that you're making. You can have, you know, you can focus on two key reasons, or in a longer piece, you can have several more. But the key idea was to identify what are the actual reasons, you know, in my own words, and what is my supporting evidence? Is it data I collected and I analyzed? Do I support it through previous literature? Do I support it through any other means? So trying to note what is your supporting evidence for each argument, and then trying to write at a conclusion, and then looking back and thinking, is this conclusion actually linking all those different threads of evidence, threads of reasoning in the argument that construct the argument at the top? So in this seminar, we will focus with detail. So the home exercise was just to get you started on thinking about how to structure your arguments. And this seminar is really about you. It's about your opportunity to discuss your thoughts, to practice, and also to find out about more techniques and tools that perhaps could help you in constructing good academic arguments. So the key learning outcome, as every week we have a key learning outcome for each week, is, you know, really to improve your essay argumentation, because all essays have an argument, but it's the you know, level of sophistication in a way of that argument and the way that it is evidence that makes the difference between the different grading criteria, grading thresholds. And also very linked to, you can't really speak about what is a good argument without speaking about the argument structure and developing your skills on the structuring side of it. So we'll start, as all the other seminars, with you having a discussion about the home exercise and feedback on, I'll actually feedback on a couple of examples because I included a new live demo at the end. So I would like to have time to focus on the live demo as well. And then moving on to a couple of theory slides, what makes a good argument, just some top tips, key steps to make a good argument, and some types of argument, because there are different types of argument that you may want to adopt. And moving on to the interactive exercises in the latter part of the seminar, we'll do, so every week I'm trying to show you different tools that academics use to help them in their research and in their writing production. So today we'll use quite a similar one as last time, but perhaps more user-friendly, which is called the Mind Map, which again is the, I only use examples of free software that you could also use in your studies. So we'll look at argument mapping just for a few minutes, just so we start trying to think about arguments on a topic. And then we'll end with live marking a short essay, a different essay than last time. And you'll get to, we'll get to look at the introduction, conclusion, and also compared to last time, also focus on one of the paragraphs and looking at the argument in two stages, the argument, the overall argument of the essay, whether the introduction, the conclusion, and the introduction are linked and the argument is clearly identified and explained in the introduction, but also looking at the paragraph level argumentation and whether the argument can be traced throughout the paragraphs and whether it is structured correctly. So we'll do that, and then we'll get to, you'll get to guess the grade that essay got, and then I'll get give my my feedback on that argument. So we'll start with the home exercise, which was on argument building. So I'll show you a couple of examples, again, anonymous examples from you, just kind of two different styles of how you approached the task and give some feedback. But first of all, before we start looking at the actual examples on the screen, I would like to just hear maybe a few comments from you about how you found the exercise. So, I mean, the questions, again, you don't have to respond to all the questions, but just start thinking about this. You know, how do you usually approach the task of building an argument? You know, some students just read a lot of readings and then come up with an idea thinking, well, you know, this will be my argument. I read out all the reading. I see these limitations, or, you know, a data-driven approach that you perhaps for a master's dissertation, you collected, let's say, some interview data, or you did an experiment and you already know what your findings will be and therefore you know what your argument will be. So there's that way of structuring. But how do you usually approach, you know, honestly, and in your own experience, how do you usually approach this task of building an essay argument? What are the key steps you usually take? And how do you know, like, you know, when is the moment you actually decide, okay, now I have my argument, now I'm ready to write it because I have a clear argument. So yeah, how do you notice when that moment comes? And just some general comments about, because I know quite a few of you did the home exercise, so we'll only look at a couple of examples every week. But I would like, you know, more, you know, if some of you can participate in this bit of the webinar and think about, you know, generally, how did you find the home exercise and whether, you know, whether that structure was actually helpful to refine your arguments or not. I mean, maybe perhaps another strategy is best suited for you, or perhaps you found this strategy helpful. And yeah, just kind of maybe some comment on the home exercise for those who did have a chance to do it. Did you find it useful to have this diagram template kind of neatly categorizing the argument, then the reasoning, the reasons, and then attach evidence to each reason? Or was it a bit, was the picture a bit more complex? Did you feel the need to make additions, to fill, you know, to fill in the boxes differently, to draw different arrows, or to add anything to the model? And yeah, very interesting question. I guess it's a reflective question to think about is, you know, after you did this process, either on your own essay that you're writing now or on a previous essay, has this process changed anything about your actual argument? Have you done this exercise and thought, actually, I will structure my argument a bit differently, or actually, perhaps I should read more on this particular reason of this argument? So yeah, those are just some thoughts. Of course, you don't have to answer to everything, just as usual, just to start off the conversation before we go into more detail. So yes, if you would like to talk about that, yeah, please, as usual, either raise your hand or just, because it's a small group, so you can just speak or use the chat as well. So I have both the chat and the participant list open. So would anyone who did the exercise would like to comment on, you know, one or a couple of those questions?
Hey, Alexandra.
Oh, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Hi, Charlie.
Yes. Yeah, so I would like to speak first. So I think so this diagram basically, because my essay question, it basically has two question marks, and these two question marks are not like as simple. That's why I found this essay quite a difficult task to write about, because like, so basically two question marks, and not like, both are like open-ended. So both are open ends, like open-ending questions. So I've found for myself, actually, I can even add more like arguments. So I have two basic arguments for my for the diagram, and then I have several like reasons. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I found it quite clear to do it that way. Quite good, quite clear. Because in my essay, if it's not in a diagram, I might use different amount of content to support one reason, which were actually being displayed in the essay. I didn't find them quite clear, but when displaying them on the diagram, it also makes my own my mind map more clear. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a very good point there. It really, I mean, the argument and how you structure or plan your argument really depends on your question. And some dissertations or essays will have one central question. Others will be framed more about pros and cons, or like theory A or theory B style approaches. Or other essays will just have, you know, more than one question. So you can have two or three research questions. And in a way, you could approach it in the way that you have one key argument per research question, but you can also have one argument per research question, and have, if there's a cohesion in your research questions, you can have one overarching argument, and you can say, well, we have this overarching argument, which would be explained by those sub-arguments in which are linked to each research question. So again, there's no one, you know, exact model that fits with all types of essays and dissertations, but yeah, so it's more about finding the right strategy of organizing and reflecting and trying to refine the argument. And I often find in my own experience, and also a lot of my PhD colleagues, especially if you do a long piece of writing, like, you know, a PhD is 400 pages, like 100,000 words, and you have many arguments, and often it's very difficult to fit all of those in an overall argument. But it can also happen in master's thesis, even if you have a 10-20,000 word piece, is a very long piece of writing with a lot of evidence. So it's very important that you think, you know, you ask yourself, do you have one overarching argument with several sub-arguments, or do you have two arguments that are quite separate that fit within the same topic in a way? So we'll look at this a bit later, as well through the examples. Does anyone else want to comment briefly on this before we go on to the examples? I'll just check the chat to see if there's...
Hi, can I say
something? Yeah, sure. Hello, Yansu.
Hi. I was very interested in this activity because for me, making an argument is kind of really a big challenge. Mm. So while I was doing this activity, I found out how to structure the overall essay. And also before doing this activity, I was also thinking about my experience of writing essay. So for me, I usually read a lot as much as I can. And then I try to look at the questions and try to analyze what the question is aiming for. And then I try to make an argument. But for me, argument is more like kind of choosing positions, because in my department, we have a lot of debates on mm-hmm. certain topics. So I have to take my positionality and then I chose one of them and I have to verify why I support this idea and what's the limitations. Mm. So, but like before knowing this kind of activity, I kind of randomly choose, because it's quite hard to develop my own thoughts on that topic. Mm. So I kind of chose the arguments which has a lot of evidence.
Yeah, we'll look at, actually it's a very good point, because we'll look at this in the first live demonstration that we'll do about, which will be actually on a more controversial topic. So often in some disciplines, especially in social sciences, you have topics that, you know, there are several perspectives on, or they're just very controversial in the sense of, you know, arguing one side or another. So we'll look at the kind of questions that you know, you have to ask yourself before deciding on which argument to take. So using the position that, you know, is supported by the most evidence is kind of, you know, a logical approach in a way, because you do need to have data and evidence and literature to back up your position. But there are also other things that go on to this reflection, I guess, is, for example, you know, can any assumptions or biases impact the way that you construct the argument, especially in social science topics. So yeah, thank you for that. That's very good comment, and I'm glad you found this helpful. And often when you do kind of diagram or mind mapping of the arguments, often a good strategy is actually to say, okay, I want to argue this. Let's say an argument has two main theories. You can explain it through two main theoretical frameworks, or you can have two different arguments, competing arguments on a certain topic. And then I can say, well, I choose this argument for the reasons that you have. But it's also a good exercise to, on a separate diagram or separate sheet of paper, to just as an exercise do the other arguments, thinking about, could I actually argue it the other way? And this, you know, you won't include this because you'll argue in the way that you chose to argue. But thinking in more detail about the other side of the argument could really help develop your limitations section of your dissertation or your essay when you speak about the limitations of your research or your argument, because being aware of those other perspectives in more detail could actually improve that section. And that, again, links to showing critical thinking that could improve your grades overall. So, I mean, does anyone else want to speak on this before I move on to the actual examples? I don't see anyone raising their hand. So let's move on to some examples. We'll have plenty more activities as we go through this topic today. We have two examples here, and you can obviously do this, you know, using different techniques, as we discussed in the note-taking as well. You can use different diagrams, different software. This is a similar kind of template as I had on the PDF, with three reasons and three arguments. And then a very nice example from one colleague here, a handwritten one. So I often do handwritten examples, and sometimes I do type it up in a document, but it actually helps me sometimes to write it by hand. And in a way, it does help my thought process, but it's up to everyone what technique works for you. Here is an example on the essay that we looked at last time as well with Anastasia. So we looked at the structure then, but here is like how the argument is outlined. And I think that's an interesting example because it focuses on case studies. So the argument in a way it's demonstrated through the case studies. So the argument is here, the development strategies during the post-colonial period have exacerbated inequalities within countries. So the question here is, asks you to take a position, is that, do those development strategies exacerbate inequalities or not? And the student here takes the position that, you know, it does. And yeah, you have a good, you know, a good way to structure different reasons is to have different areas of reasoning. So if you have an essay, for example, like this one, that there are different reasons in different spheres of life, for example, in politics, economy, can be other other elements as well. It's very good to separate them, but then you also have to think about, you know, are there any subcategories of this? You know, as I understand it, this was quite a short essay. So for a short essay, it's, you know, it's good to, you can have like broader categories, but for a dissertation, this diagram, you know, if this was a dissertation at 20,000 words, the diagram would probably look like, okay, that's, you know, a category of reasons rather than one reason in itself. And this category has perhaps several other reasons if you had to write a longer piece on this. And then, you know, there's this, it's interesting, like how do you incorporate the case studies? I mean, in a way, the existence of case studies that do demonstrate your argument is not a reason in itself. It's in a way supporting the reason. So I'd rather include, I think, you know, the case studies should be rather included in the supporting evidence, because if you think about this, the marker will see, okay, so here are two reasons, and those two case studies are the supporting evidence for the two key reasons. So you may have some of the theoretical supporting evidence from the literature also backed up by your empirical evidence in your case studies. So that's a way to structure it, thinking, okay, categories of reasons, you know, reasons within those two categories, let's say political and economical reasons on the other side. And then the case studies are a way to even, you know, further demonstrate some, perhaps some of the literature that's also backing your argument. So we'll look a bit later in the seminar, we'll look a bit at how to do a thesis statement. So that's the very brief top line, one or two lines, summary of your argument in your introduction. So we'll look at that and what are the qualities of that. But yeah, I think that's a very good way to structure a short essay. But for a long essay, we have to think more about breaking down those categories of reasons and thinking about how to best incorporate the case studies within the theoretical evidence as well. So then we have another example before moving on to the more theoretical part. And here is exactly an example that we discussed earlier, that what happens when you have a question, an essay question or a dissertation question with two parts, or you have a broad question, quite broad question in your dissertation or essay, and it neatly kind of falls into two key arguments. So in a way, those arguments are quite separate. They do have, they do have different supporting evidence. So I'm not sure how well you can see that. So the first argument here says, some historic arguments support the existence of race, the concept of race, but not any of them is enough. So, you know, in a way you could rephrase that as, well, there are some historical arguments or literature that support that, you know, this concept, the existence of race, but they have, you know, very important limitations nowadays, especially with more, you know, other theories that developed since then. So in a way you can develop in this case when you have something like an essay that has a historic approach to it, saying perhaps there were some theories, if you wrote this essay, let's say, I don't know, 200 years ago, you'd have a different argument, but it's critiquing previous arguments from a present perspective. So we'll look a bit later into the different types of argument, and depending on the specificities of your research question, there are also, you can have historical arguments that go through reviewing the theories throughout history, or you can have more thematic arguments as well, especially when thinking about your literature review. In this case, I won't go into all the details, but this is just to show that sometimes, you know, diagrams do get a bit messy and a bit complex if you have different arguments within the essay. So one good strategy to think about, if you're finding your structure even further, if you have, you know, one or, you know, two or three or even more arguments to start with, is thinking, is there any like overarching argument that encompasses those two or three or four or how many points there are? Is there anything that actually can use as an overarching argument and then go into detail? So you have here basically saying that the historic arguments for the existence of race are limited. So that's what the essay is saying. And then how modern technology can help explain some of those features, like adaptation in this case. So think about, you know, in this case, is there any kind of overarching idea that could encompass those two arguments and say, well, this is my key argument, and those are the two subparts of the argument, and then work through your reasons. Okay, so before I go on to the theory part, I'm just trying to juggle between the chat and the participant list. Charlie, no apologies needed. So the handwriting actually is good. It's, you know, it's good to have different examples of different styles to, you know, be able to inspire everyone on different styles and formats you can use. I personally do actually tend to use pen and paper, but then I would always transfer it into a file, and I'll have a very, very messy diagram. I even used to, and a lot of my PhD colleagues do as well, have an A3 or bigger, larger piece of paper that I would put on the wall and then try to draw all those different parts and then try to refine it further. And then the diagram you'll do in the software will be a very kind of clean version of all the different thoughts that you did on a large piece of paper. So, okay, let's move on to the more theoretical side of it. So to link this content to the first week content, which was all about understanding the marking criteria and being able to identify those core skills in the marking criteria, core academic skills, and the level to which they, you know, you have to demonstrate them in order to get the grade that you want, whether that's merit, distinction, or depending on your grading system. I just want to show you an example of kind of the types of criteria that markers do read and what are the key characteristics of an argument in those marking criteria. So I use here a generic marking criteria from the University of Bristol, just as an example, but all of them are quite similar. And sometimes the argument will be a separate section in the marking criteria, like in this one. So you have a list of knowledge and understanding, argument, presentation, and so on. And sometimes you'll have the argument will kind of be incorporated into some of the other categories, like, you know, part of the argument will be marked as part of critical understanding or reading and synthesizing material and so on. But a lot of marking criteria do have argument as a separate tick box. So when I'm marking, I often have to mark a separate tick box from like very poor to excellent on the argument. And we'll look into the live demo at the end on how markers actually make this decision and what explains the difference between the grades in terms of your argumentation. So just to kind of give you a feel of what markers do see when they get this guidance. So how do our arguments that are good or excellent described in more detail? So we'll look at two bits, which is, yeah, the high first, 85 plus and 70 plus, and it's pretty similar for masters as well. The difference, the key difference between undergrad and master's dissertations in terms of the argument is the way you evidence it. So in a lot of master's programs, especially research master's programs, you are required to do original research, and part of the evidence and argumentation, like the quality of your research and a reflection of your research would actually impact the way you are able to evidence your arguments. Whereas in undergraduate dissertation, you can rely more on secondary sources, but we'll look at this in more detail later on. So arguments are usually described in quite broad terms, to be honest, and that's why it is very important your arguments are clearly structured and they are easy to follow for the marker, because a lot of those criteria are quite subjective, but they do give you some indication about what our markers actually looking for in your argument. So critical usually is the first thing that comes up, a critical argument. That's what, you know, makes the difference between a very high grade and a not so high grade. Because if you don't have you can have an argument that's not very critical in its approach. You can have an argument just saying, I will adopt this argument that was used in this other research, but I'll just perhaps use a different case study. So you'll get originality points on using perhaps an interesting and engaging and understudied case study, but you don't necessarily get additional points or critical or thinking points on the argument if you simply adopt an argument that was, and you mentioned that you'll adopt this particular argument, but just using a different data set or case study. So analytical, again, is something that we spoke a lot about, note-taking. Having critical note-taking, it really helps that, because an argument shouldn't be, you know, only descriptive, describing what happens in, say, an experiment or a data analysis, but also has to be analytical. Why, you know, answering how and why questions. And a word that's often used is sophisticated as well, and that's used for the high grades, because and that it means that's about the different threads of the argument and how the different threads or sub parts of the argument are incorporated in a cohesive argument overall. And very importantly to underline is, you know, the evidence. The evidence is always described as outstanding or excellent evidence. So it's about the quality of the evidence or in your engagement with the evidence. And independent thought, seeing beyond the question. So those kind of phrases, again, are pointing towards critical thinking and towards what Yonsu also commented earlier about taking a position, but also having a justification for the position you take. And all this, I can't stress this enough, but it is, arguments are always supported by your evidence of reading, and excellent arguments come from a wide reading of, a critical reading of the sources, of some source at least in detail, but a wide, a broad understanding of the field that you're working in. I mean, what's the difference between a very high grade and just a 70 plus? So the difference is in the extent of this, and that's what, it's very subjective, and that's why I, you know, as a marker, a lot of markers would agree that the way that the argument reads and flows and links through the structure of the essay really can help make the difference between between those marks. But also what actually makes the difference is your engagement with the reading as well. So often you'll find essays that have, you know, very original and good argument, but perhaps there are some sources that are lacking, or perhaps the data is not analyzed to the extent that it should for that mark. So although the argument itself, the overall argument is excellent, sometimes the argument doesn't live up to that excellent overall argument, and often it won't be able to get a very high mark, but it will still get a high mark overall. So that's just, you know, so you we link back to the seminar one discussion about always checking your marking criteria, and it's always useful to actually see if your dissertation or essay marking criteria actually has a separate criteria for argument, and how much weight is put on the argument, and whether the argument is kind of incorporated in other marking criteria. I'll just go to a couple of slides of just some key tips and key questions to ask when you're constructing the argument. And then I would really like to leave enough time today for the live demonstrations so you can be a bit more interactive, so you can participate with some of your thoughts on this. So I kind of compiled a list of, when thinking about, as a marker, I read different essays on different topics, usually within the social sciences, but I also get to proofread a lot of work, which is not from social sciences. And I just thought about what do all arguments have in common? So what would all markers agree that all arguments have in common? So you can think about the qualities of your argument as general qualities that all arguments have to have, and specific qualities for your discipline. And we can discuss this in more detail in the later slide. So all good arguments, regardless of your topic, are very clear from the start. And I do emphasize from the start, because often I will get, and other markers will get student essays that will have kind of what I call a contextual introduction that describes the problem, describes perhaps why the research is interesting, but I don't find the argument at the start, or it is not clear enough what the argument will be. So always ask, is my argument clear from the introduction? And does the introduction outline how am I going to structure this argument and what type of evidence I'll use to support it? And the next slide will look at specifically at developing on this. How can I be very clear from the start? And how can I be very clear from the start is having a good thesis statement, which will be the subject of the next slide. Based on solid evidence, as we have seen in the marking criteria, the third bullet point is all about reading and evidence in that marking criteria. So an argument is expressing a point of view in a way, or is taking a position, depending on your discipline. In some social sciences, it's really expressing perhaps a stance on a very controversial issue. In the exact sciences, it's still expressing a position, because still some of the knowledge is still being debated, especially doing work on very new technologies or new type of experiments. If you have an argument that has been made a lot of times before and your study is simply kind of confirming what has already been found, to get a good grade, you also have to think about what does your study bring new to the field. Even if you support arguments that, let's say, other experiments found exactly the same findings, but perhaps yours is from a different country, or a different context, but you do have to explain what does it bring new and how does it build on this existing scholarly arguments. Because otherwise the marker may think you're just, you just applied an argument to a random context without putting too much thought into why that is new and relevant and important. So a good argument avoids logical fallacies. So that there are many types of logical fallacies that, if you're interested in this, there's plenty of books on logic and structuring arguments that go into the many different types of biases and fallacies of arguments. But just as a top, as a tip and a top line on that, ask, are you actually using the reasoning or evidence, or are you actually asserting your personal views as part of your argument premises? So it's fine to have an interest in the topic. A lot of us write on the topic because we're interested in it, especially in the social sciences. And it's obviously fine to have your own interpretation, but your own interpretation has to be backed up by some of the evidence. And also, this also applies when you're actually judging other sources, because also other authors can have their own biases in their argumentation, their own limitations. So when you use sources, secondary sources, or even data sets, if you use secondary data sets, think about, am I judging this evidence based on its actual substance rather than based on who is making those claims? So often, just to give you an illustration, for example, there are very well-respected and trustworthy sources or very well-known authors. And it's very tempting not to be critical, because you think, this person has been researching this for 20 years. It's very difficult to argue against them. and you don't have to argue against them, but you, the reason for which you use those sources in your argument has to be because the content actually does make sense and does support the argumentation, not because it's the most famous study on this or because it's the most widely available data set. So everything has to be justified in terms of including it in the argument. Okay, the very important thing, what actually often makes the difference for markers between a 2i and a first or merit and distinction is how easy it is to follow. There are many, many arguments that are very original but also become very complex. And often it's this complexity and not subdividing your argument enough or structuring well enough that actually makes you miss a very good grade, because the marker may think, that's, you know, a very original, great idea, and I'm really looking forward to read this. And then the marker gets confused or lost in the text. And, you know, we all picked up a book one time and you read a couple of pages and then you closed the article or the book because you couldn't follow the argument. And it was, you know, the argument was written in such a way that you couldn't follow, not because you weren't interested in the topic or you didn't want to learn about the topic, but just because of the writing style and the structure. So yeah, we're trying to avoid this. So this is how, what the marker will look at is that the argument that's stated in your introduction is followed throughout the essay and it's evaluating, you know, you come back to it in the conclusion and you evaluate it. So I like to think about, you know, every single paragraph in an essay or dissertation, like a puzzle, that every paragraph has to contribute something to the overall argument, whether that's explaining the method that you use to reach that argument or whether that's explaining the theoretical background that helped you shape that argument, or whether that's actually explaining your findings that helped you evidence or demonstrate your argument. So the fourth thing is, you know, convincing. The argument has to be convincing for the audience. That's a kind of a more general principle, because the audience in, you know, your cases is, you know, number one audience is the marker. But often in dissertations, undergraduate dissertations, but also masters, but also undergraduate dissertations, a lot of students I know and I taught at university do want to go further and perhaps think about publishing something, especially if you do some original research. You spent so much time on, let's say, collecting some interview data or doing some experiments. So you think, maybe I write this dissertation. And I also have, you know, the first audience I have in mind is the marker, but I also have an audience in mind, a potential publication that I could write perhaps in a student journal, in a postgraduate journal. There are several of those that exist. You can look those up. And in a way that will also help you structure your argument, because you can think about, you know, following the structures that are relevant for that. So yeah, writing has many aims as well within it. For the marker itself, the very core purposes, the minimum purposes the argument has to demonstrate is that obviously you answered the question, and you answer the questions through the argument, and that you have an original angle to the topic, which is what's required for higher marks. So now I'll just talk about two things before we go on to the live demos. So we think about argument cohesion. So we said, you know, one of the key aspects of all arguments is that it's easy to follow. So how do I make the argument easy to follow throughout the essay? There are two core levels of this. One is thinking about your overall essay cohesion. The overall essay cohesion is what the argument would assess, usually what the marker will assess in the first stage of marking your essay. Is looking at introduction and conclusion, and, you know, perhaps your abstract if you have one, and thinking about, does this argument actually, you know, does it have like an overall idea to it? Is it, you know, there is there a cohesion between the introduction and the conclusion and the abstract? And then the marker will look at the paragraph level cohesion, whether the paragraphs kind of build the argument, like in the last example, like a puzzle constructing the argument, but also if there is argument cohesion within each paragraph. So the the key step to build this overall thesis cohesion is to have a good thesis statement from the start. So a thesis statement usually appears as one sentence very early on in the essay. And we'll look at the live demo as well to see how that is structured. And the thesis statement is the main idea. It's kind of like, I like to think about it as a summary of the argument. So the you can think about your argument as, you know, you can think about it as a box, and everything in that box, you know, you have like the diagram, you have maybe different subparts of the argument, all with different reasoning, all with different supporting evidence, all in this box. And the thesis statement is basically what summarizes everything that's in this box in a way that's compelling for the reader. So a thesis statement does take a position. So it does not present two perspectives having equal weight. What does this mean? So often when we have a lot of questions, especially in social sciences, are structured as, you know, a how or a why question, or does this lead to this type of question? So let's say, as an example, from the top of my head, let's say, does note-taking improve students' ability to memorize or something like that? If I was to write a thesis statement, I'd have to take a position saying yes or no, or yes in this respect, or no for those reasons. There are a lot of student essays and dissertations I read that, you know, try to give equal weight, even if there's not equal weight of evidence. So for example, saying, well, you know, there are advantages, but there are also disadvantages. And if this question is not explicitly enumerate and discuss the pros and cons of this, then if the question is a how or why question, or yes or no question, or a question that asks you from the question to take a position on the issue, and you say, in your conclusion is basically, I haven't answered the question because there's those good points and also those bad points, and I can't decide on the answer, then that's not really answering the question. So how do you actually do this in practice? So after you do some critical reading on the topic, what I recommend is to start with a working thesis statement. So don't think about, okay, this is my argument and I can't change it now. So I usually do a working thesis statement. I recommend students to do it as well. And then like you can revise it. So the more you read after, or you can do this quite early on in your preparation, and the more you read after, or the more you start writing up other sections of your dissertation or essay, you can revise it and think about how do I phrase this in a clearer way. So when you have your final thesis statement, so you have had a working thesis statement, you update it, you've modified it several times through your thinking process, through your research process, then what are the questions that you have to ask of your final thesis statement to make sure it's, you know, a good and strong enough one? So obviously, did I answer my question? So if your question explicitly asked you for something, don't give a non-answer to it. Is there relevance in my thesis? So often you have a thesis statement that is answering a question, does take a position, but think about this, like, you know, if the marker goes and said, you know, so what, basically, you know, like, so what, like, what's the relevance in this field? Like, why is this even worth studying? Then perhaps the thesis statement can be structured in a way that's stronger and it speaks more to the marker. So you want to avoid the marker asking, like, so what, what's the point of this? Or so what, that's common sense, what's the novelty in this? So this links to the third question, is my thesis statement too broad? So again, through the working thesis statement process, it's a lot of it is narrowing down this. Is my thesis statement too broad? And then when you review your work and you proofread your work and you check it before submitting, think about, you know, does, you know, can I look at every subsection in the body of my essay and actually link it to the thesis statement in a way? Can I say, okay, it's my thesis statement, this paragraph links to it because it explains this particular sub argument with this particular evidence. So are there any paragraphs or sections that diverge from the argumentation supporting this thesis statement? So is there anything there that it shouldn't B, have I thought, that's a question we discussed when you commented on the home exercise. Have I thought critically about my assumptions? How did I get through the process of choosing a position on my argument? So these are just some basic questions to ask about when you do your thesis statement. So does anyone already have a thesis statement for your essay or dissertation? I would suggest if you have one, to write that on the chat whilst we go through the next theory slide, and then we'll be able to review them. So if you think about what's my thesis statement, if you have one, just write the sentence in the chat, and then we can review them after, when we get the interactive part of the seminar, and I will check that then. Now moving on, so this flows from, so we looked at the overall essay cohesion and the thesis statement and making sure your introduction and conclusion are clear, as Anastasia explained in the last seminar with examples. It's really key to that. But also what I want to emphasize today is the paragraph cohesion. And the paragraph cohesion actually ensures you tick that box of following your argument throughout the essay. So as we discussed, so this is what we discussed so far in the introduction, including your final thesis statement, contextualizing the argument, and show that you be able to demonstrate that you will answer the research or essay question through using the argument, and how will you do that. The body obviously details each part of the argument and evidence, and the body is what actually demonstrates this paragraph level cohesion and the flow of the argument. So some tips on this, some strategies on this, is to smoothen the transitions between the paragraphs. So think about when you read your essay and you structure your essay, think about how does one paragraph actually flow easily from another. Is it actually easy and enjoyable to read for the marker? We all like reading articles that are enjoyable to read. Does the paragraph start too abruptly? Does a paragraph start a completely new idea without providing any context to it, or without linking it to the argument? Does every paragraph actually help build towards the argument? And what really helps, again, is thinking carefully about the word choices for your transitions. And by that, a quite common thing that I see in a lot of essays and my fellow marker colleagues as well, is that often, you know, because we get, especially those of us who have English as a second language, such as myself, I got taught about all those transition terms. So addition, you know, further, more, moreover, a concession, however, nevertheless, causation, consequently, and summation, in sum, to sum up, to conclude, etc. And we thought, we learned how to use those, and we tend to overuse those as well. And I did observe some this in my writing. So I say, do use transition terms, but when they actually add meaning to the sentence. So don't use a furthermore, and if it's obvious that that point is a further point that develops in your previous point. And don't use too many howevers and nevertheless, you know, just to build, to add and add to a paragraph, because this actually risks getting too long paragraphs, and too long paragraphs are hard to follow for the marker, and they do make your structure less easy to follow and less good overall. So, really think one of the strategies, just in terms of very practical tips, what I do with my writing is actually use like Control F and type however, or nevertheless, or furthermore. And if you have, I don't know, like a 10,000 word document and you used like however 300 times, you know, it's probably a good strategy to look again through your argument and think, does this transition term actually add anything here, or did I just use it for the sake of using it? So this will actually help smoothen the transition, because you do need transition terms. Sometimes you actually do need it for the meaning, like in consequence, if you're actually explaining a consequence of a certain action. But often those are just filler words that will actually disrupt some of the structure. So it's a very difficult balance to strike here. And the conclusion, as I said, was the argument supported by the body of the essay. Very importantly to remind the marker what the argument was, because especially in long pieces, it can seem very repetitive in a 1,000, 2,000 word essay. But if you have like a 20,000 word dissertation, it's very important to say in the conclusion, this was the argument and this is how it was supported throughout the essay. And pointing at the limitations of your argument. And here is where it really helps to actually, especially if you take a position on an issue that has other positions as well that are acknowledged and there's some evidence on, really thinking about how would I argue this the other way does help really strengthen your limitation section. So let's look at if there's any chat comment on thesis statement, and then we can go into just one example of a type of argument, and then we can go to the live demos. So, okay, so we have one thesis statement from Gina, so we'll use this as an example. So it's in learning theories, educational technology and teaching practice are in a reciprocal relationship, reshaping and progressing one another. So this thesis statement in a way, it does tell me about the topic. So it's about that, okay, so the technology that teachers use in learning theory and the practice, so basically technology and teaching practice do shape each other and help progress each other. So that's, yeah, the topic and the key topic. But what I would recommend in a thesis statement is to be more specific. So actually think about, something can be in a reciprocal relationship or reshape and progress one another, two factors. But you can also, to be more specific for the marker, you can think of things, adding things like, very briefly, like how does it do? What's the key thing in your argument? Like perhaps educational technology and teaching practice are shaping one another in those key aspects or measures like 1, 2, and 3 and in this way. So it's more like to think about what kind of other detail do you use? Yeah, so the title here is How Connectivism Informs Teachers' Roles Regarding the Design and Use of ABSI in Korean High Schools. It's a how question. So how does connectivism inform those teaching roles regarding design and use of this? So I would suggest the thesis statement actually does, provide a direct answer. So you can say, the thesis statement would be connectivism informs teachers' roles in this design by this and this, or depending on the structure of your argument. It's difficult to tell without having, the actual essay, but what I mean as a general rule is to try to actually mention those key details. So if you have a two-part argument saying, this informs this, so kind of having the question part in your thesis statement by this and this factors in this context, which is the Korean high school context. It really depends on the actual reading, because of course I haven't read all the literature on this topic, but I would say being more specific. So we have a couple more. So we have from Damilare, a systematic review of, I can't pronounce medical terms in English, nasopharyngeal carcinoma in sub-Saharan Africa, presentation, prevalence, pathology, and viral association. So that's something, that's a title, that's a very good dissertation title, pointing at four different areas that you study, so the presentation, the prevalence, the pathology, and the viral association that you will discuss in detail in your dissertation. The thesis statement, you have to think about what I am actually arguing here, like what I am saying new. So perhaps you found something new about, you know, any of those factors. So you can say, the systematic review of this in the context of sub-Saharan Africa shows four factors, and add what is new. Of course, again, I didn't do the research on this topic, so I can't say what is new in it. But the thesis statement should be formulated in a sentence, and I think that's a good title and not thesis statement. So think about your argument and your findings, and think about how can I summarize this in a couple of lines at the beginning. Bing Shan says, a comparative study of the phenomenon of Chinese culture of fascia among domestic students and Chinese international students. So again, that's the title. So to think about this thesis statement, again, think about what does this comparison, it's a comparison study, what does it show? So you can say that, so this phenomenon, so what did you find about this phenomenon among domestic students and Chinese international students? So you can say something like, you know, this thesis argues that, what does it argue about this phenomenon? Through comparing those case studies. And then you have a thesis statement saying, what is your argument and what is the method of delivering it? So Charlie has a question. I have a question about introduction. I did not really understand how I show in the intro. How will I answer the question through the argument? So what I mean by this is, after you have a thesis statement saying this is what basically, you know, the essay is about and how I will argue, we looked at this in the live marking example actually, but just as a brief overview now, it's saying something like, this argument will be demonstrated by, the findings from this qualitative interview data, for example, that will show that. So it's more about how you structure it. So the research question is answered through the argument. So let's say, for example, if your question was, is globalization good or bad for the UK economy? And you say, you know, you make the argument that is good. You answer the research question through the argument, because you took a position, and the argument and sub arguments of as to why globalization is good for the UK economy, for example, just a random example, will actually be able to prove it. So I think it will make more sense when I actually show in an essay how the students structured it and how it's good to structure that. So I'm just conscious of time. I will take more questions at the end or put them on the chat, because we have about 20 minutes left. So we have quite a few examples to go through. So perhaps what will help here is thinking about the different types of the different argument types. So here is one example of an argument structure type, which is called the Tolman argument. So it's making, thinking, you don't have to adopt this. It's just, ways to help you develop the skills of thinking about the different strategies. So you're starting with the claim. So say, the argument is being made, then thinking about the grounds, what are the data and facts offered to support the claim? So the warrant in this kind of model is, what are the logical connections between the grounds of the claim? So what are the logical connections between the data and the facts in the grounds? So backing is whether you support these logical connections or not. What is also important with arguments, because no argument is perfect, is thinking about qualifiers, making a statement about the strength of the claim. This is particularly important if you have original research. So if I did a study with 20 interviews. So of course there's many limitations into my ability to generalize and make an argument based on that. So of course I can still make a strong argument and a clear argument, but I can qualify the argument by mentioning, by making a statement about how the strength of the claim in that sense. And yeah, that's, you know, a more complex thing, I guess, but sometimes you can have arguments that you can have data that supports most of your arguments, but you also have exemption cases or outliers that could rebut your argument, but don't worry, cannot worry about that at the moment. So the key idea here is that there are many types of argument, and that's why, you know, having a model of this is very difficult, because it depends on each question. So you can have, you know, you can look at, I put in the notes for this week, I put some extra resources in the resource box at the end that looks into, if you're interested in this topic, to develop more on this topic, there are different models of how to build arguments depending on the type of the question. So whether your argument is more chronological, is more thematic, whether the argument tries to mediate a debate or offer a middle ground solution or alternative solution, that's particularly important for some more controversial topics. But what I want to underline here is that the argument really depends on the question and your, you know, the aims of your writing. Okay, so I will see what's on the chat now, and then before we go to the live demos. Okay, so Gina says, I'm currently writing a 5,000 word essay. In this case, I'm expected to have a one sentence thesis. Is it okay to be 3-4 sentences or even a short paragraph? So the thesis statement is just the summary of your argument. I think it will make sense when we actually look at the live marking example in a few minutes, but it's, for example, I, you know, just to give an example, like in my own PhD thesis, I'm looking at how attitudes towards immigration are shaped. And I have many, many sub arguments and subcategories and types of evidence, but the thesis statement is that attitudes are shaped more through direct local contact than through mediated contact. So that's like the very like top, you can think about the very top level, and then your argument can develop. I think it's important to have, to be able to summarize your key argument in a sentence or two, because otherwise it can become confusing. But you can use the, you can use a paragraph to explain, okay, this is my thesis statement. That's like the top level summary of your of my argument. But also then use maybe the subsequent sentences to explain how you will demonstrate this. So saying, well, I will demonstrate this through looking at the case study of this and this, or using this data set, or studying this particular phenomenon in this context. So, okay. I think all of this, it's the theory part is more difficult. I think it makes more sense when looking through examples. So I'll just very briefly show you this, because I really want to focus on the live marking, because everyone is asking questions about, you know, the actual structure and how it looks in practice. So this is just to introduce one other tool to you that you can try perhaps at home in your own time. So again, a free software, and you can use for brainstorming in a visual way, including for planning your arguments. So as I mentioned before, a good strategy to develop your argumentation skills is to really think about controversial topics and mind map possible arguments. Things like, I mean, I didn't want to put very controversial topics. Like I wanted to put like, you know, should smoking be banned, for example, as a topic question. I put like, you know, is globalization a force for good? Or kind of, there are a lot of questions that do need you to take a position on. And I suggest this as an exercise just in terms of your skill development in general. And then this develops argumentation skills that could actually help you with your essays. So I just want to share the tool with you just to show the tool, and then we move straight on to the live essay marking and your questions so we can actually see the academic arguments in practice. So I'm going to stop. I have to stop this share and then start it again because I need the other screen. Okay. Okay, so this is the software. So I really do recommend, this is a nice way to visualize the argument, and you can also save your maps to Google Drive, which is very, very handy to keep track of all your ideas. So that's perhaps even more user-friendly than the one that the Lucid chart we used last time with Anastasia. So what's really useful in terms of general skill development and like any kind of professional skill development that really links to your academic skill development is being able to do those kind of exercises on some topics, perhaps controversial topics in your discipline or topics that there is a debate on, that there's no like one objective accepted truth. So you find many arguments for and against globalization as a phenomenon. So you can look at different categories. You can look at like, you know, arguments around economics, whether it's good or bad for economics. You can look around like climate change. You can look around like so many different topics. So it's a really open type of question of debate. So what I tend to do to kind of refine my argumentation skills that would help you in academia, but also, in your studies, but also in, you know, professional environments, is actually do very short exercises to, you know, think about, to reflect on your own assumptions. So you can have two lines of argument, an argument that will basically demonstrate how globalization is a force for good, and an argument that will demonstrate how perhaps is not a force for good. And then you can really use the software to map different two arguments at the same time, and think about which one is stronger, which one do I have more evidence for, and think about, do they put any of my own assumptions into this, for example. I can say, you know, yes, I can go with the yes type of argument because I benefited from having a globalized world and, I don't know, coming to study abroad or like benefiting from holidays or whatever it may be, like from my personal kind of own biases. But perhaps if I was the same researcher living in a different context where I was impacted more negatively, then I would have a bias towards the other argument. So just using like this kind of mapping software to, you know, have different types of arguments. You can have, you know, economic arguments for each yes or no. You can have you can speak about climate, you can speak about like so many things within this topic. And this really just helps you, I'd recommend, you know, developing your thinking on the topic. And you can do the same with your own essays, especially if you have to choose a position, like some of you mentioned. You can have your essay question and you can have your essay plan with your, instead of yes or no, you can have, you know, my argument and map your essay. And then you can have what would be an alternative argument that the marker could have. You have to think about, maybe the marker would think, well, there's an alternative argument to this. You don't have to. I mean, the purpose of the argument in the essay is to demonstrate why your argument is well supported, but also acknowledge that there are alternative arguments to that. So that's just kind of, the software is quite helpful to do that and the type of exercise. So now moving on to the live essay marking that everyone is waiting for, to see how the thesis statement is structured. So we'll look at a philosophy student essay. And the question is as follows, is one of the shortest questions I've ever seen, is explain and assess functionalism. So the assess part of the question does tell you to take a position, is making an assessment of it. And the essay is quite a short essay, so we'll have time to look at the how the thesis statement is structured. Okay, so explain and assess functionalism. So let's look at what a lot of you had questions about is how to structure your thesis statement. So there's the essay title here, and this is a very short introduction outlining the thesis statement. So this essay shall outline two versions of functionalism, analytic functionalism and psychofunctionalism. In the first section, I will give an exposition of both analytic functionalism and psychofunctionalism. In the second section, I shall argue that a supposed advantage of functionalism, namely the multiple realizability of mental states, can be construed as an incisive argument against analytic functionalism. In the third section, I will demonstrate the limitations of psychofunctionalism using an argument for semantic externalism in the philosophy of language. I will conclude that both versions are no better than their predecessors in characterizing the myriad ways mentality manifests itself. So does anyone have a view on this first paragraph? What would be the thesis statement in this, if you find one, and what do you think about its structure? Anyone wants to comment? I'm not sure if it's if the text is not too small on the screen. So, okay. So, for me as a marker, I do see this as a very clear explanation of what the essay is going to be talking about. So, from the very beginning, you have, okay, this essay outlines two versions. So you have, I know like not everyone is an expert on this topic. I'm not a philosopher, but you can see the structure being very clear. So we have like two versions of this, and it can be two versions of any of your theory or whatever you choose. And then what really stands out from this essay is actually what is the argument here. It's that the student assesses functionalism by outlining two versions. So explaining two versions, so that's the descriptive part of it. So those are the two versions. And the conclusion after the analytical part in those sections is that both versions, so both those two versions that were outlined, are no better than their predecessors in characterizing how mentality manifests itself. So I would say this could have been clearer, but in terms of position, it does have, it's not a there are advantages and disadvantages and I can't decide on an answer type of argument. It's actually saying that those versions are not better than the predecessors, predecessor versions. So it is a clear, it's basically assessing two versions of functionalism and concluding about their about how they relate to previous versions and has having a clear conclusion that they're no better than their predecessors. So that's what I mean by having it clear from the beginning as a marker, even, you know, even if I'm, you know, didn't mark this particular essay, I can see very clearly this essay has like two key things it assesses and does have a position, a clear position on it. And then I will obviously look through, I will look through the structure. So the section one, I will see very clearly from the beginning, it does answer to the first part of the question. So the first part of the question is explaining, and then, which means the descriptive part, and assess, what does assessing, sorry, not this one. What does assessing tell you is that you have to critically analyze what you have explained and to make to take a position on this. So yeah, the section one answers the first part of the question, and I can see this clearly looking at the two versions and describing them. And then section two and three are really clearly titled and they do fit with the summary in the introduction, which is a really good practice to describe what each section will achieve. So the first section answers to the first is very clearly linked to the first part of this question about explaining, and then the second and the third section contribute towards assessing, and based on all those sections, the conclusion is the key argument here. So just looking at the conclusion, I will send you this essay is free to be used, so I will send it to you part of the this class's material, so you can look at it, so you can actually have time to read it and think about its structure with what we went over today. So just looking briefly at the conclusion here. So the conclusion here explains again what are the limitations of those approaches, because this, you know, to remember, the main argument is that those approaches are not necessarily more advanced or better than previous approaches. And also it does conclude the essay, it does remind about the conclusion of the essay in this part. Perhaps I will have been clear about including one sentence about the limitations. And if you remember this slide, the two slides ago about the qualifiers of how confident can you be about this argument. But this is quite a different type of context because it is a philosophy essay, which is highly theoretical. So in most empirical work, in most of your work that's based on collecting some data or doing some experiments, you'd actually be able to speak about the limitations much more. Just wanted to focus on this kind of part and just to show how to, you know, clearly state the focus, you know, how did you narrow down the question? So you could have assessed this phenomenon, you can replace it with any of the phenomena you study. So you could assess functionalism in various ways, but the student narrowed down the question saying, I will explain, I will do the first part of the question by explaining this and this. And then this is how, yeah, I will explain the first section, and then I will assess it in the second and third question, this section. And then I will conclude and I will take a position on it. So it's kind of like a standard type of paragraph in an essay. And I will send it to you this essay to actually look at the paragraph level structure as well, because this essay, every week we use a different type of essay example. And this essay is a first, this essay is a 74%. So you can look at, it doesn't have to be on your topic, you can look about at the way it is structured and the way that the argument actually flows. And when you read this, you find that even if you're not an expert in this topic, you'll actually find it quite easy to read, because it does, the argument does flow throughout the sections, and the reader is made very, you know, it's very clear for the marker or the reader at the beginning what this essay will achieve in each section. And the marker is also clear that what the position of this essay will be. So I'm just very aware of the time, because we always need more time to discuss all those things. So I'll leave some time for the questions and checking again the chat, and we'll send the essay so we can look at it in more detail. And just before we answer some of your questions, because I already see some raised hands, just a reminder that next week will be on topic sentences and paragraphing. So today we focused more on the thesis statement and how to summarize and outline your argument and construct an effective argument. But we also mentioned, we went into the theoretic, more theory discussion about how the argument has to flow and be cohesive across the different sections, and how this can be done in a very effective way is to have a structure of topic sentences for each paragraph. So this is exactly what we'll be focusing on next week. So next week will be a bit different. Next week we'll have a lot of different slides with examples of paragraphs from different disciplines or examples from our own essays. And we'll actually look at the cohesion within the paragraph and the argumentation at the paragraph level. So now I will move on to just some questions and discussion, checking the who raised their hand and the chat before ending this session. So I'll just check the chat first. I think Gina has a question. Please, Gina.
Hello. I have a question about the diagram that we did for our home exercise. Yes. And do you think this framework would be still valid for literature review part of the dissertation? Because I feel like a literature review should be a bit more objective than discussion, than introduction part.
Yeah, so if you... I'll try to go back to the slide about with the diagram. So, I mean, you could use a similar kind of thought process in, let's look at this example, for example, if you think only about the literature review. So you can do a structure by section of your dissertation, and you can have an overall structure about your dissertation as a whole, which will be your key argument, your key reasons, similar to what we did in the home exercise. And then you could have perhaps a structure for each section itself. So if you think about the literature review, it's difficult to have an argument because yeah, the literature review is a review of the existing data, and positioning the scope of the literature review is to be able to position your own study, your own research, and your own research question within the larger literature, and be able to say ultimately, how does my study contribute, even if it's a small contribution or just a different case study, how does it contribute to the literature? So I wouldn't necessarily say it will have an argument. The argument, if you wanted to frame it as a sub-argument for the literature review, the argument could be something along the lines that, you know, this review, this literature review shows there is a gap in studying this particular phenomenon in this context, and that's why my study will choose this case study or this method that's under researched, for example. So in a way, it's not an argument in the sense of your overall findings argument, but it's something you found through reviewing the literature. But I wouldn't say the model could work, but I wouldn't say it's exactly the same. In terms of reasons, I would rather structure it as, instead of the argument saying, what is the literature gap? How does my study contribute in the literature? And instead of having reasons, you can structure literature review in different themes, for example. It really depends on your topic as well, but a structure of literature reviews thematically saying that, you know, this topic has been approached from those different perspectives, and detail on each theme. And obviously detail on the studies, so the evidence will be the studies that you read or the books that you read. But the argument would be whether you identified a gap. So you do have another question, please?
Thank you.
Do you have another question? I still saw your hand up. So, okay. I hope that that does make sense. I will focus on identifying the gap in the literature and identifying key themes in the literature rather than reasons, but you can follow a similar structure. So I am looking at if there's anything else on the chat, because we did start on time today. So I don't want to keep you for too long, but I'm just checking the chat. So I'll answer the questions on the chat in the next few minutes, and then we'll end the session, and then you could, if you have any other questions, you could obviously write them in an email to me as well. So Yonsu says on the chat, I have two questions. Firstly, I'm preparing for an exam and the professor wants us to answer a question by linking to some related topics, but I'm not sure how to connect the topics effectively because I'm concerned I might lay out so many things. Secondly, for my dissertation, I have one general research question and three sub-questions. And my mentor said that I have to synthesize the first and the second sub-questions. Yeah, so I think on the second point, yeah, it's quite common to have one general research question and sub-questions. So in that way, you'd have like one argument that answers the main research question. And you can think about your three sub-questions as having, you know, their own answers, and those three answers would contribute to the overall argument. In terms of your mentor's advice, I think what they mean is perhaps the questions are a bit too broad. So I think if you do email me your those two questions, because it's difficult to comment without, because I don't really know what they meant. I guess the mentor meant that sometimes the research questions are a bit too broad, because you have to remember that the marker not only assesses how you write and how you structure your essay or dissertation, but also thinks whether those questions, you know, are realistically answered in a piece of writing of this length and the research that you have available to you. So perhaps that's what they mean. Yeah, but I would say that it's really important if you have a general research question that your three sub questions are actually linked to the main research. They're actually parts of the main question, because you often can get a situation where you have, you know, a main research question and you keep on adding questions, and then some questions can actually become bigger questions in themselves. So what I mean is that think about your questions, thinking about, is this question actually a part of the main question, or can it be a question on its own? But to comment on the specifics, yeah, you can just email me those questions, and I can, you know, I can know what your mentor actually means by it's not synthesized enough. On the first point about the exam, answering a question, linking it to some related topics. So yeah, I'm not sure what they mean by that. I think it's quite common when, you know, if the marker or the lecturer or yeah, in an exam you have a question saying that, yeah, discuss this topic in reference to other related topics. I think a good approach is to frame it theoretically. So for example, you can have a phenomenon that you study. You can have, let's say in the example of studying globalization, the example that we briefly used in the example earlier on, you can have, you know, theories that are economic, cultural, you know, theories around like climate impact and all sorts of theories, and that's how you can connect with other topics, because a lot of the theories, especially in social sciences, like in your case, are interdisciplinary. So yeah, I think that's a good way to be able to show the broader understanding and show how it links to other topics perhaps. But again, I'll have to look at the actual questions to be able to comment in more detail. Okay, so I mean, like, we're a few minutes over time, so apologies for the slight delay. But I do hope you found this helpful and you found, you know, this diagram and looking at an example of an essay and a first paragraph helpful to think about your thesis statement. So as I said, today we looked in more detail about the summarizing the argument and the thesis statement, and next week will be really linked to the argumentation skills as well, because we'll look at the cohesion of the argument within the paragraph level, and it will be many more examples that you can comment on, because we'll actually edit some paragraphs together and think about topic sentences and how cohesive arguments are in those paragraphs. So yeah, if you have any examples of essays that I could use anonymously for the next session, please do send it to me as well by email, because I would like to use as many different types of examples as possible to look at different paragraph structures. So thank you everyone so much for the discussion today and the different examples from the home exercise. And I will send, as usual, I will send the notes, and the next week when Victor will join, he'll be able to tell you a bit more, because some of you asked more about the whether videos can be available or whether other types of materials can be available. So that's a decision that Victor is looking at now. And when Victor comes back next week, because he couldn't be here today because of some urgent meetings. So yeah, he'll be able to tell you more about that as well. But for now, thank you everyone for all your comments on today, and I hope you found it helpful, and I'm looking forward to see you next week here, and the week after they will have another guest teacher, which is Karina, another PhD researcher who will, is an expert on the referencing and paraphrasing part of the essay writing and dissertation writing strategies. So thanks everyone, stay safe, and good luck with your essays and dissertations, and I will see you next time, next Thursday.